Welcome to Bookish Podcast with Kath and Al, a podcast about books-ish. A quick disclaimer before we start, there may be some spoilers, so please save the episode for later if you don't want any. And also, please follow us on social at We Are Bookish Pod. We hope you enjoy.
Oh, new world.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, hey, hey.
Do you know what I find really funny? Like, when we start the recording, we act like we're just saying hello to each other for the first time, but we've literally been on the phone for like an hour and a half already.
You know, so Kath nipped to the loo before we hit record, and I started singing Whole New World. I got through to the second verse by the time he came back. And then just
I wasn't quite as quick this time.
No, she's so quick. Like, before we even got on the phone, she's like, I'm just gonna have a shower, I'll be 10 minutes. I thought, oh great, I'll make a smoothie. And literally, I don't even think I got downstairs, and she's like calling, and I was like, how have you showered already?
No, hold on, I wasn't gonna tell you how long I actually was.
I said
I'm gonna shower, so like 10 minutes, at 10:27. And then I called you at 10:38. So actually I was 11 minutes.
That's quick.
Yeah, I only had a body shower. I do need to wash my hair actually though. But I can't be arsed. So I bought this new shampoo and it looks so nice in my bathroom. It's called like Monday or something. Monday?
Oh, I think I've heard of that.
It looks really nice. So
yes, I do feel like there's something nice about having aesthetically pleasing like toiletries in your bathroom.
You know what I'm like, which is so vain. Well.
I love Kath's bathroom. I don't think we've ever spoken about this, but it generally is my personal oasis. And if I could live there,
I'm very like anal about keeping my bathroom clean, and I like it to look nice. It's like my thing, and yeah, and I have my own bathroom where I currently live. So it's the best thing ever. I love it. It's like the best thing about this flat.
I miss my old bathroom in Stokey.
Oh my God, that was a nice bathroom.
It was a great
bath. That was a good bathroom, yeah.
And me and my old housemate were talking about getting, like, you know, the plants that you can put in your shower to, like, help clean the spaces. Oh,
oh my God.
We really had plans for it.
Yeah.
I can't do that in my mother's. It's just not.
It's not fine. It's not the same vibe.
It's not the vibe.
Mum, I'm going to put eucalyptus in the shower. You're wondering but that plant that you bought me when I moved into this flat is in my bathroom, and it is thriving. It loves it there.
Yay!
So.
I love to hear
it. My fern died, which is really sad, because I kept it alive for ages, and then it died.
One of my plants is at my mum's plant rehab at the moment. I just have this one. It's not thriving anymore. It just kept falling, like the wind would blow and it'd fall out of its pot. It was constantly just like throwing itself off stuff. And so it lost a lot of earth and yeah, it did. Soil, whatever. It lost a lot of that, and it's on its last legs, and so my mum's taken it in and she's going to rehab it back to life.
Your mum is great with plants, so
she really is. Sure. She's naturally green fingered, even if she doesn't know. Like, I wouldn't say she's like overly knowledgeable about plants.
But some people have a natural gift.
Yeah, she's got a great intuition about them. So she's taken it. She's taken it downstairs. She's repotted it, put it in a bigger pot, and hopefully we can bring it back. And she said, once it's better, it'll go back upstairs to your room. Thanks.
Oh, well, my avocado, I've got two avocado, actually I've got three avocado plants. And one of them, like two of them are doing quite well. They're on my windowsill in my kitchen. And one of them just won't stop growing. Like it's huge. And I already repotted it once in the last like 3 months, and the roots are growing out the bottom again. I don't know what to do with it.
She's like, take that, CEO idiot that said that if you want to buy a house you need to stop buying avocados. She's planting her own.
What a free plant. So actually, yeah. Growing avocados is really fun. I had to stop because I don't have any pots left or any space for them. But then my friends for my birthday bought me these like things to actually grow them, so I'm gonna have to grow some more at some point. Maybe I'll do it as presents. Like maybe I'll grow them, and then when they're like big enough to plant, I can give them as a present.
Oh, that's very sweet. That's actually
that
a really
cute,
good idea.
I'm gonna do it.
You and Tom should get an allotment.
What? Just putting, do you know how long there. You have to be on a waiting list for an allotment?
We'll start it now, and by the time you're ready, by the time it's there, you'll be ready.
Honestly, I would love to have an allotment. I would love to have a vegetable patch. That would be my dream. I tried to grow chilies this year, but it didn't go very well. I mean, as in, it didn't go at all. They didn't grow. As in, the plants didn't grow. So I was like, okay.
My friend's partner has a whole bedroom dedicated to his chili. They own a house. It's very big. And it's like big enough to, it's big enough to allot a whole room to just growing his chilies.
Gold.
Which is like amazing. And we've said he let go Scotch bonnets and all sorts, and we said you gotta give us some, but we haven't had
any. Well, a guy I work with, me and him always talk about plants, and he's actually propagating some plants for me at the moment. Legend. And he gave me some tomatoes from a tomato plant, and they were like stripy. They were so cool. I was like, thanks. So anyway, we digress.
Sorry, we digress. Good afternoon. Good morning. Good afternoon.
We're back. I don't know if you guys missed us, but hopefully you did, because if you didn't, I'll be sad.
So after a short hiatus, because summer.
Yeah, Ellie just goes away all summer, every year. She's living her best life. No, I'm joking. I went away as well. We just didn't match up our summer plans.
Yeah, we didn't sync.
But we're schedules. Back, and we're going to be consistent. So we've actually lined up our next four books.
Yes.
No, including this one. So three.
Three.
And we know what they're going to be, and they're all really good books. So I think you want to be here for it.
I would agree.
I mean, I'm excited. But before we launch into the book of the year, which as it has been dubbed, I'm not sure whether we agree with that or not, but I was gonna just talk about a program that I've been watching that I think everyone should watch, because it's like the most entertaining thing I've seen for a long time.
Go.
It's called The Ultimate Wedding Planner. Okay, it's on BBC, and it is basically The Apprentice meets Bake Off, but it's weddings.
That's perfect. That's so good.
Honestly, some of the people are so funny. Like this one girl, she cries at every wedding and says, but it's just someone's real wedding.
I fucking hope so.
And she's like crying, like, but it's just someone's special day. And it's so funny. And then like, basically they all argue with each other. Like this one episode, and they're literally just like shouting at each other. And it's so funny. But basically they have to plan a wedding, but they don't really have to plan a wedding, because they usually have the venue already and like some of the stuff sorted out. So it's a little bit like, you know, on The Apprentice, they get given like a folder and they're allowed to do X or Y kind of thing. It's a bit like that. But it's really good. It's really funny. And it's just really like relaxing to watch. You know how like, Bake Off used to be really, really good. It's a bit like that. Sorry, but it's not anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like these shows are really good at the beginning, and then when you're in season, anything post like a season seven, six, maybe like a season six, everything sort of tails off after that.
Yeah,
like, where do you go? People write themselves into a corner.
And also I think everyone's trying to do Bake Off stuff. You've got like the Great British Sewing Bee, the British Interior Design thing, whatever. Which honestly, like, I love them all. I love all those shows, but this is good because it kind of like has got a little bit of the format of The Apprentice as well, because they're like a team. So they fall out because they're a team, and they have like a lead planner, you know, like the project manager vibe. So I think they've done well with it. I would recommend it. It's really funny.
On the same vein, in the same vein, kind of, there's a program called My Mum, Your Dad, something like that. It's either Your Mum, My Dad, or My Dad, Your Mum, or something. It's on ITV. It's honestly the most wholesome dating show I've ever seen. I've been watching it with my mum, and I would love to put my mum on there, so she could like find a man.
Yes, basically. Oh my god, I'd love to see that.
It's so good. They basically fill this house with like middle-aged people. They go on dates with the others in the house, and those dates are like dictated by the dating experts, who just happen to be their own children. And aww. So it's so lovely, because then you see like, it's also fun. It's so lovely. And it's also so funny, because then the kids cringe at their parents, like being like, you know, we're all adults and we're all sexual beings, some of us. And so, like, well, you know, some people are.
No, I know, not. I know. It's just I heard you self-correct there.
Yeah, what were sexual beings? And then I was like, no, actually, some people are just asexual, and that's fine. And yeah, and it's just like, yeah, they, you know, they cringe when their mums and dads kiss. They're like, oh god, they're kissing.
To be fair, like, I think I cringe when my parents kiss. I'm like, guys, can you stop doing that in front of me, please? And they're like, Catherine, you are 28 years old.
How do you think you got here? And you're like, stop.
Yeah, but, I don't need to know, thanks.
But it's honestly just so sweet, because then it's just really nice just seeing, like, how the children really are just want to see some happiness for their parents, and, like, you know, that there is a second chance at love, kind of thing. And it's just very wholesome. So if you've got the time. Also, there was this guy that came in recently. They introduce people every couple of days, a bit like Love Island in that respect. And he ruffled a few feathers, because a lot of the men sort of then went, oh, well, don't know about him. And this guy has some red flags, to be fair. But, like, you know, and you're like, oh, are you being a bit judgmental because he's made you feel a bit insecure?
Literally.
Come in and he's like, but then the nice thing about it is when there's genuine connection, then they're like, okay, they have a genuine connection unless they express otherwise, and we're not messing with those couples. Because it's actually about finding love. So, yeah.
Yeah, my colleague said it was like Love Island for parents.
Yeah.
Which is cute.
But in a nice country house.
I'm going to watch it, you know. I'm going to, after you've done this, I'm going to go do my food shop, prep my lunches for the week, and then I'm going to watch it.
Good. Yeah, you won't be disappointed. Prep. Do it. Also, if you haven't seen it, and I think I showed you the video, it's on Twitter. We're still calling it Twitter, although, and we said we would change the name. We need to change our bios.
We need to change
bios.
Our bio, yeah.
But for now, Twitter, because no one else has changed the logo to X. Have you seen that coming of age story in a 5-minute video that came from TikTok? It's so good. I'll send you the TikTok again. I think I sent it to you like last night. Basically,
you sent me this TikTok girl. Last night. Oh, did you send it to me on TikTok?
I sent it to you on Twitter.
On Twitter.
Or on WhatsApp.
Okay, I'll find it. One of our many lines of communication. It's one of the ones.
Yeah, we have many. there's this young girl who's doing like a, not a get ready with me, but like, what's the opposite of that? It's called something.
Oh, like when you like take makeup off and stuff.
Get unready with me, right? Yeah. She's the eldest sister. And then her little sister runs into frame and is like, can I have some scissors? And she just gives it to her. And then the next thing you hear is a scream. And it just unfolds from there. And it's just fantastic. It just shows just like it's honestly so lovely to have siblings if you have a good sibling relationship. And it's just that whole dynamic of it. It's like a little coming of age story in 5 minutes. It's the aww, chaos of the middle sisters. It's trying to get the silence, the younger sister who's ready to tattletale. It's the mum knowing that there's something up but can't quite nail it and coming in every 5 minutes. It's fantastic. It's honestly just like the best 5 minutes, like the most wholesome 5 minutes of TikTok we all watched this weekend. So yeah, it's called I think it's just like palm views 962 bangs on TikTok. And then you'll see.
Okay.
It's quite fun.
Look it up.
Anyway.
Book time.
This is why we're here.
We are going to talk about a highly talked about book.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just contributing to the rest of the narrative around that. Today we're going to talk about Yellowface. And if you haven't seen it and you don't know what we're talking about, then where have you been all summer, frankly?
It's true.
Sorry, but like, it's literally been in every single bookshop, like in the displays, like everyone's talking about it. We succumbed to the hype as well, and we were like, gotta read it.
It's like it's not a hard to miss book. Like, it's like bright yellow.
Mm. But we have some mixed views and opinions on it. I think both of us generally thought it was easy to read, quick, fast paced, like we got through it, we enjoyed it, like it was like objectively quite a good book, but we're not necessarily sold on the 5-star rating that it's getting, I think. Is that fair?
No,
is that safe
to
say?
I think that's fair. I think that she really, what Rebecca F. Kwong does is scratch the surface of what she actually wants to say, because obviously she works within the industry she's critiquing. And I think that we, personally, I think we get stuck in areas for too long to really explore the critique. Because I found it really interesting. And then it just, it I think it had so much momentum in the beginning and it tails off towards the end.
Yeah, I would agree. And actually,
really, I think, disappointed.
Yeah, and I think the pacing's really off. And I think the ending's predictable as well. You know?
Fine, we'll read the blurb for you, Yellowface. Go on, then. This is one hell of a story. It's just not hers to tell. Athena Liu is a literary darling and June Heyward is literally nobody. White lies. When Athena dies in a freak accident, June steals her unpublished manuscript and publishes it as her own under the ambiguous name Juniper Song. Dark humour. But as evidence threatens June's stolen success, she discovers exactly how far she'll go to keep what she thinks she deserves. Deadly consequences. What happens next is entirely everyone else's fault.
Yes.
So I think it starts like, we spoke about it in the last episode, and I think I made like a bit of a throwaway comment, because June Heyward is got to be one of the most narcissistic characters I think I've ever read.
Yeah.
Right? She is terrible. There is nothing redeeming about this character at all. You just want to slap her.
Although, and, I've just read Boy Parts, and I would say she's
got a rival.
That is mental, that book. Anyway, carry on.
We say that about a lot of, but I feel like we've said this about a few books we've read. We said that about I'm a Fan. She's the most narcissistic person.
Oh yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. Jesus. Anyway,
but in a different way, I feel like there maybe were some more redeeming things about the main character in I'm a Fan. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe not.
Well, there was, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
She wasn't racist like this one is, seemingly.
Yeah.
So I made a comment in the last episode, it was quite flippant, because I think I said, like, you'll read a part and then you'll have a thought and then she'll say it. But I meant it as in, like, she says so much shit. She just says shit. And she's so, like, unaware of how ignorant she sounds. And so you're raging and you'll have, like, a rage point against whatever she says. And then it's almost like she answers your... answers, she has an answer for the rage point that you're sort of brewing or having. She's awful.
I know what you mean. Like, you'll be like, oh, but you've stolen the book, and then she'll be like, well, I haven't stolen the book because I like rewrote it or whatever.
She just as like you're about to be like, but how dare you, or you're ready to come back with like a debate or like a something to say against this like main character, she already has a justification for why she's doing something. And it's so flawed. She is so flawed, the character. But it feels almost like everything, and we'll talk about it a bit later, everything that is probably within the author herself, she's put in to this main character. Feels like a venting device.
Yeah.
For all, like, and this is the vehicle in which she uses. She uses this, like, this June Heyward to vent maybe a lot of the stuff that she's feeling. Not the racist parts. I think that's just something. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
No, I know what you're trying to say. Yeah. Like, basically, like, I read, like, some criticism of the book saying it's, like, just like the author's notes app, and like, is her voice too strong in the book and stuff like that, which I think, I don't know how I feel about that, because what do you think? Because I think on the one hand, she's obviously trying to make a statement, and it's obviously feelings that she has, otherwise she wouldn't have written the book. But I haven't read any of her other books to know how she like writes characters and stuff, so I can't really say whether I think it's her voice or not. But it does feel very like, it does feel like her personal story in a way. Like, did something like this happen to her? Like, I would want to ask that question to the author. Like, do you feel like someone's stolen your work before, or are you like taking the story and running with it because you because of the commentary and the feelings you have around the publishing industry in general, in terms of like race and who gets the opportunities and things like that.
Yeah,
or did it always sell her work? Do you know what I mean?
I feel like it's the latter point. So I think it's probably commentary around the things that she's previously written. Because it feels like all of the critique that June, all of this like sort of built up hatred that June has towards Athena is like the critiques that maybe Kwang has like had in the space about her own previous writing. I feel like she's sat on her hands a lot because I feel like there's probably more that she wanted to say and didn't say it, because obviously she still has to make a living within the industry that she works in.
Yeah.
But then, and that's why I feel like it felt flat at the end. It's very meta. It's like very on the nose, because everything that she, and also this character is completely unreliable as a narrator. So everything is prejudiced in how she says, how she believes, how she views the world. So the sort of racist rhetoric that's in her, you know. I feel like maybe she, that June is like a vehicle for her to be able to sort of get this sort of out, like spit it out as such.
Yeah. And actually, to be honest, like when I first read the book, I just wanted to talk about it all the time and be like, and I think it is very clever the way that she talks about the publishing industry, because it's so meta. The book is so meta, especially like, I couldn't find the quote, which is really irritating, but there's this bit that stuck with me, and I think I mentioned it in another episode, but she made a comment about how bestsellers are chosen.
Yes.
And I'm like, that is so true, isn't it? Like books, like Lessons in Chemistry, that was a chosen bestseller. It was everywhere. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And like Yellowface itself, like the irony of that is not lost on me, can I just say, that the book is obviously a chosen bestseller and it makes a commentary about that.
Yeah.
And you know, in the book, June's like, oh, I've written all these stories and like they just don't sell. And it's like, you never really know whether the story was good or not, or whether, so you never really know whether it was the publishing industry against her or whether she just wasn't like writing stories that were selling. So that's that ambiguity, because you have like an unreliable narrator as well. It's quite interesting because like she obviously did get published in the first place, but maybe she didn't have the support that she needed in order to become a bestseller. Or maybe her stories aren't selling, like, you know, you don't really know. So I think that's quite interesting. And I think also like the way we talk about book talk and things like that as well now, like the way that's sort of changing things a little bit, like if a book goes viral on book talk, it might not have had the marketing budget that some of these bestsellers have got, and then it becomes a bestseller. And I think that's really interesting as well. And that's obviously not in this book because TikTok's not a thing in the book.
Right, and I'm really upset about that a little bit. And I mean, I think also there's something to say with, I feel like it's weird, you've got pre-pandemic and then you've got post-pandemic, so you've got this really weird in between bit, because I feel like maybe especially in the pandemic, that's when you probably saw the biggest boost in, not that book talk wasn't a thing anyway, but like with anything, everything accelerated in that 2-year period.
Well, also so, TikTok, like I didn't go on TikTok before the pandemic. I was like, I had on TikTok, and then
I knew
like,
on TikTok, but I didn't use it. So like it's really weird, because I actually, she talked about online discourse, so she talks about book Twitter and Twitter beefs, but if we are going to talk about the publishing industry and bestsellers and how bestsellers are made, then BookTok is a huge
part
of that now, part of that discourse. And I don't really feel like it was she talks about Instagram, because we don't really dig into it, and I think that's a whole thing in itself. And for me, I wonder if we got stuck being online a lot, because I don't know that it really helped much. I don't really feel like it was that prevalent.
Think it dates the book a bit, because like book Twitter, still exists, but Twitter's not the same space as it was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And without including TikTok in it, but then maybe if she did include TikTok, that would date it as well, because who knows how long TikTok's going to be massive for. And I think when you talk about social media quite specifically, when you talk about a specific platform and a specific way that people use that platform, you do put the book in a very specific time frame.
Yeah.
Because now, like, I read the book thinking, like, this would have been set in, like, 2018. rather than like now.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, the choice of whether to date the book like that or not, or whether to use like, because you know, in like Ghosts, for example, like Jolly Alderson's Ghosts, she doesn't use a real dating app.
No.
She makes one up.
Yeah.
And I think that's very clever, because then you don't date the book, because, for example, like way back when it was Tinder everyone was on, then it was Bumble, then it was Hinge, and now it's whatever. So yeah. Like Thursday, for example. So if you use your own app that you've invented, yeah, maybe it takes the person out the story a little bit, but like I think it's clever because it doesn't date the book as much. Sorry, I've gone on a bit of a tangent there, but,
no, but
you know what I'm trying to say.
It's the same issue I had with Olive, right? Because they are...
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so Olive is a book that we did an episode on. Go check it out. It's about being child-free by choice. Really good exploration. Not a good exploration of it. I had some issues with the book. A lot of it was the dating stuff because they made a reference to hot dudes reading, and I was like, no, that's not when it started. I think it was like an incorrect date or an incorrect fact or an incorrect where how the platform started. And then so I went to look it up and it completely took me out of the book. So it's, you've got to be really, not that you have to be really careful, obviously everyone is always really careful about when they do things, but yeah, you sort of date yourself to doing things, or you trip yourself up by
it
being incorrect if it's not correct, you know?
I mean, God, they probably didn't realise the downfall of Twitter would happen like it did, but still.
I mean, it's still alive and kicking, kind of. I mean, the
but it's not the same, is it?
It's not.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's still going. I think people are choosing to ignore a lot of the toxicity problems that come with this app now, because Black Twitter is still alive and kicking and people still call it Black Twitter, so
yes, well, so,
but yeah, it's not the same space.
But I think that's a big thing, but also I think, you know, she uses, I guess maybe she just uses Twitter as a bit of a plot device, doesn't she? Like people her unraveling and her like people start to like clock on to like the fact that she might not have written the book and things like that.
You know, that said, I really wish she would have made more of BookTube, because BookTube is huge in
and
the same,
would have done deep dives into her and
exactly
been like,
exactly, because there are people enough that care to do that, and so I think that would have been, and then going down the comments of a YouTube space as well, especially that would have been good. I think
and
we were stuck on
gossip sites. Does she talk about gossip sites at all?
Gossip, maybe blog sites.
Yeah, but yeah, no, you're so right. Like YouTube, you can picture it, can't you? Being someone being like, this author didn't write this, but it's like, okay, sorry, slight tangent, but Colleen Hoover has a ghostwriter.
Yeah, that's why she churns out so much shit every year.
Like, how is that? And then people have started to like clock on to Colleen Hoover being a bit, I don't know, like there's all sorts of like videos about her and stuff now on YouTube and TikTok.
Yeah. So. Yeah. My friend, nothing to anyone who does actually enjoy her work. Like, we are our own people. We like what we like. I read one and was like, that's enough. My friend at the gym read three, and I don't know how she read three, but she did, and she says she judges people now on whether or not or whether they read Colleen Hoover and they like it. But there was a point to that. She churns out a lot of stuff. That's it. That particular girl, I love her to bits. Shout out Carly. She has read more than 100 books at this point in the year, and it's like the 17th of September. I think she's on like 104 books. And my friends in a separate group chat were like, oh, my sister's giving me Colleen Hoover, has anyone read her? And I was like, yeah, I don't like it. And then they asked me why, and I was like, well, you're not gonna like what I've got to say, but since you've asked me why, and I just took, like, sorry Carly, I took a screenshot of those particular books. I think I did tell her that I did that. She does listen to the podcast as well. And I was like, she basically wrapped up my sentiment in her those three stories about why she doesn't like Colleen Hoover. Not as a person, I don't know her as a person. I'm just saying, like, yeah, as a writer and the books that I like. Just to express it, because, you know, sometimes people go, and I just think that, I'm just going based off what we read for It Ends With Us. And you can.
Yeah, I've only read It Ends With Us, and I have no intention of reading any other part of the books.
Just think she really deals with some really big things, not in the best way, which I found surprising. Because she has had experience in that space. Who am I to say I've not had the same experience as her? But, you know, and it's like, I was just a bit like, and then I think my biggest problem was because I didn't know where it was marketed to. It's very like,
yeah.
And for me, if I had a teenage daughter, I wouldn't want her to read it personally.
No, exactly.
But that's me.
But it's interesting that she has a ghostwriter.
Yes.
Basically, the whole book is like, what is, it's very interesting because it makes you think about like what plagiarism is, like what is the role of like the writer and the storyteller, and like, you know, Ellie made a point about IP writers, then there's like the whole thing about ghost writers, like for example Millie Bobby Brown has got her 19 steps or something it's called. She's got a ghost writer and she's open about it, but then like, is it her book? Like, maybe it is because it's her story, but then like, I don't know, like it's very like an interesting debate, and I don't know what the answer is, but obviously like tries to justify what she's done. So basically she steals a manuscript from her dead friend
that she just saw die
because she choked on a pancake, which
it was really kind of comical. It was really fun.
Yeah,
it was funny.
I was like, no, if it's so wild that it was like good. But she claims that she knows she's stolen it. She knows she's stolen the manuscript. But she claims that, like, because she rewrote it and it wasn't a finished product and she, like, did all her research and all the rest of it, she hasn't really stolen it, because without her, it wouldn't have been published. Which is, like, obviously a bit deranged, because she literally stole an entire manuscript from a dead person and claimed it's her own.
How dare you? Yeah, literally.
And there's a lot of... It's about... there's a lot of, like, questions about the fact that, you know, there's the race element, and she changed her name to Juniper Song to sound like she is not a white woman, and which is just so wrong on so many levels. Mm-hmm. But it really like puts into question like, what do you own in terms of like stories, and where does the writing come in, and all the rest of it. And yeah, I mean, obviously, the point of the book is that it's wrong that she steals the book, but. It does raise a lot of questions, doesn't it?
She does it twice. I mean, the audacity of this woman, Juniper Song, June Haywood, the blackfishing, for lack of a better word, because I don't know what this would be if she's Asian. Anyway, she's being racially ambiguous when they remarket her. The fact that she took it and then felt that she had some authorship on it anyway, because she rewrote it, and then the lines are blurred about how much is hers, how much is Athena's. But she never credits Athena until she has to, until her, you know, she's up against it. I don't think she ever does.
No. And also, like, you have editors and stuff. It doesn't mean it's their book.
No, exactly.
But editors are credited, right? Yeah. So, like, it'll be, like, edited by whoever.
And then she does it twice. So then she finds something else of... Athena's work. She takes like the first maybe chapter or the first the first page of it as her own, and then she writes this other, is it like Willow Witch or something like that? I can't remember what it's called. And then she puts it out and it's a novella, and then they've actually got proof to link to the fact that she's stolen this woman's work, and she's done it twice.
Yeah.
Once that we can prove. And then she, like, she, I think to off what June then does to sort of like keep at bay like her own guilt, and I don't really think that she's that guilt doesn't feel very guilty about any of it, is like donate to like Asian charities and do work within this. I actually found that really uncomfortable. I don't know why. You know, when she was like working with like Asian young Asian authors and like how to be better, like in those spaces, like helping them come up and coming writers and stuff for particular like charities. And I just thought, well, not even very good.
She doesn't really, she like does it because she has to, doesn't she?
She does,
like,
it because she has
to. That's, yeah, not good. And I just, like, that's her point, isn't it? Like, you can't just go to one charity event and it redeems you.
Yeah, but I felt really uncomfortable when she was working with those young writers because I don't, like, one, it's, I mean, it's not to say that people of different races or backgrounds and stuff can't help other people. Like, I'm not saying that.
No, but she's pretending to be something she's not.
Yeah, and it's like so disingenuous, like, because it's the thing as well, you know, we were talking about who's a bestseller and what is actually good, and is June actually good at what she does and unlucky, or is she just like not very good and has a hard time recognizing that it's just not meant to be for her. And I think there's an element of the fact that she's probably just not a very good writer. She's probably like more akin to being like an IP writer or a ghostwriter, like sometimes you just gotta let go of the dream. But or she could also, but you know, she teaches as well, so maybe she can just give her learnings, you know. It's like, I'm gonna give my learnings back to people about what it's like to be in the publishing industry, having maybe tried it and not been successful. I don't know, maybe that would have been a better route for her to have taken, given back to a community, than it is to be like under this guise where she's been successful off her own back. And I just found also, it really uncomfortable.
Arguably she is successful. She still had a book published. Like, that's really hard.
Yeah.
And like, it's so few writers become to the level of Athena in the book. Like, it's not a common thing to happen.
And so young as well.
Yeah. But the US, you mean, like, we were talking about, so obviously it handles race and Athena. Not Athena, June, like, feels hard done by as a white woman, like, classic, like, stupid.
Do you like that there's actual videos on, like, TikTok of, like, white writers being
really
been hard done by the industry? Yeah, no, they exist. Swear to God.
Oh, my God.
It's really,
it doesn't,
like,
surprise me, but, like, it's messed up, isn't
just,
it?
Just don't blame other people for that. Like,
maybe you just haven't written a very good book.
Just, if the system is flawed, right? If what we're saying, if what this book is saying is the system is flawed, then, and it's exactly what is happening in this country right now. We're pitting people against different people and groups against groups, when actually what we should be looking at is the system, because the system keeps everybody in lock, right?
Yes, exactly.
So I think to have a discussion about diversity and race, you can't have it without class, and I can't take all the merit for this. There's a really good YouTube called With Cindy. She talks about books. She's a booktuber. And she was talking about, like, the class element of this specifically. Because if you look at Athena and you look at Rebecca Kwong, like R.F. Kwong, then they are very similar in that they both come from quite privileged backgrounds. They both were born in China, came over to the States. They went through paid schooling from, like, kindergarten through to, like, PhD. So when she looked up...
she's got a PhD.
Yeah.
She's got an MPhil in Chinese Studies from Cambridge.
Yeah.
An MSc in Contemporary Chinese Studies from Oxford.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then apparently she went to a school in Dallas that was, like, 30 grand a year through ages kindergarten up to, like, 12th grade.
Really?
So, yeah. So... there's this discussion that June has in the book where it's like, it's hard to be a full-time writer and work. Most writers are working as well as writing. And Athena is very lucky to be in a space where she doesn't have to work alongside writing. She has the space to write. And that you can't look at this without talking about class, really. Because that has an element to helping people, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
And with Cindy was saying in this book that she touches upon it, but then she doesn't actually, like, dig into the critique of that as well, which would have been really helpful to probably in digging deeper into this book, because I feel like I said, everything's really surface level.
Well, yeah, as well, because, like, also in the arts in general, like, if you have money, you immediately have a better opportunity than somebody who doesn't. because you can spend all day every day honing your craft and making connections and going to the right events and living in the right places, like living in London, for example, whatever. And it's so much easier to make your way in the arts if you have, if you're from money, because it, like, we don't fund the arts properly in this country. It's not just the publishing industry. It's any form of the arts, whether you're an actor, a painter, a writer, whatever it is. Like, a lot of people just have to give up because they need to afford to live.
Yeah, I think having, being privileged does help. Not, it just, even just for the sake of having connections, because unfortunately in this, in life, it's who you know. It really is. It's helpful to know people. It just is. Can help open a lot of doors. Not saying that it's the only way, but it's a very helpful thing to have.
It's like that classic, like, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Yeah. And it, like, it is a bit wild how much, how true that is.
Yeah, it can help. And like Kath said, like, living in London is like, it's so expensive. And so really and truly, unless you had some sort of like a very good support system and some good financial backing, there's absolutely no way that you could just have the time to.
I honestly don't know how people do it. I don't know how people live in London and don't, like, trying to become an artist or whatever, because like, it's so expensive. Even with a full-time job, that's a fairly good job, it's like every month, like, oh my God, I've got no money at the end of the month.
Yeah. Unless you do a thing where it's like, okay, I'm just going to save a heap load of money and take the time off. And then I know that I've got X amount for this amount of time to live off, and then I can dedicate myself.
But it doesn't go very far in London.
No,
like,
it doesn't.
Think about, like, the average rent is like £1,000 or something now a month. Mm. And like, what, if you save £6,000, you've got six months. Of rent. That's without any other living costs. Like, that's yeah. But anyway, like, yeah, if you've got money, basically you've got more opportunity. And like, also, I think it's not just about whether you have money, but it's about whether you have a support network financially should you find yourself without any money.
Yeah,
so you can take more risks because you know that you can go and like live at home for free or whatever if it all goes wrong. Like, that's like, that's, it's not just whether you have the money in your bank, is it? It's like whether you have like the reassurance that you can find yourself with no money and still be fine.
Yeah, it's like you said, the arts aren't supported in the UK, mostly because they don't want people to expand their horizons and revolt against the system that encloses us. But that's a different conversation.
Well, also, I think it's like ingrained in people's brains that it's not good to be like, I remember when I did my A-levels, I wanted to do art, and I love art and I still love it now, and I wanted to do it, and the school wanted me to do biology instead, even though I was better at art than I was at biology. And I wanted to go and do French at uni, so it's not like I needed biology.
No,
I mean, I still did art in the end, it was fine, but like, I remember having that discussion. I was like, I don't understand why you want me to do biology. I'm not very good at science. I'm not very good at biology. Like, why do you want me to do it? I don't understand. It's because they just didn't want me to do art. It wasn't that they wanted me to do biology, you know?
They're just to boost their, like, intake of, like, I don't know. I feel like they have key objectives and stuff like that to hit as well. Need to make sure that people are doing science. Nothing wrong against like STEM or anything like that. I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, but that's not how my brain's wired. Like, I cry when I do Excel. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not. Well, this week I did a VLOOKUP, so I'm getting there.
Yes, and there's nothing. Like I said, nothing against STEM projects and stuff like that. I think it's also important. I think it's just like understanding who our people are and letting people express themselves in the way that they feel that they should. But obviously art is politicized because they don't want people to expand their horizons. It allows people to critique things, which is why they don't want people to do art. But that's, again, a different conversation.
Yeah.
So,
but anyway, so
back to this book.
Yeah. And the publishing industry has its own set of problems as well.
Yes.
That are unique to the publishing industry. So.
Yes. They do.
Yeah.
But then also, I think the other thing that they were talking that with Cindy mentions is like talking about class as well. I think some of the critique that Kwong has had has been about whether she can write from a certain place if she's not. Okay, yes, she's from the Asian diaspora, but can she write about being working class if she isn't? And then again, that's the whole conversation about who can write what and what spaces people can live and write about, which is a very complex and nuanced conversation that I think we continue to have.
And I don't necessarily think there's one answer to that question either.
No.
I think each situation has its own set of context and its own set of circumstances. So you can't exactly... I think that's why this question comes up over and over again, because you can't be like, well, nobody can write about X if they're not X or whatever. But then you can't put a blanket rule on it because everybody's different and everybody has their own set of personal circumstances that may give them the right or not, depending on your opinion on it. It's like very complicated, I think.
It's very complicated. Yeah, we've had this discussion in our workbook club about a different author for a different book, which was very controversial. The conversation we had was
people
fell out.
Always a sign of a good book club.
But
I think sometimes it's kind of obvious and you're like, wait, no, like that's not right. You haven't written about that in a very sensitive way and I don't feel comfortable reading it from you. And I think that's sometimes quite obvious, but a lot of the time I think it's a bit more ambiguous than that.
Yeah.
Which I think this book touches upon.
Yeah. I just wish it just scratched the surface a bit more. I think it had so much going for it. And then it just sort of felt, like you said, at the very beginning of this episode, not at the very beginning, because we spoke for 15 minutes about rubbish, but like that it was Candace that was the ghost of Athena. Obvious.
Yeah.
Like, I was waiting for the reveal. Like,
I almost didn't like that. It almost felt too like, oh, the sensitivity writer is the person that unveils it all. Do you know what I mean? Like,
and she didn't have very much to go on, just a suspicion, just a hunch.
And it was so obvious because she basically got fired for raising an issue.
Yeah.
Or like being like, I think it's ridiculous that she's not going to have a sensitivity writer. Which, yeah, it is ridiculous. Like, she's writing about a topic that she's like, she needs to like be careful that she's telling these people's stories. You need to make sure that like,
and it was irresponsible of the publishing house not to have done it. It should have just been as fact. You
that
have to
WhatsApp
have this
group with her two like marketing girlies, whatever.
Yeah,
like yeah. That was interesting. I was like, oh, I could see that happening actually.
it's very like, it's just like, it's very irresponsible that did happen. And then she ruins Candace's career. June Hayward ruins her career in this altercation that she has with Candace, the sensitivity writer, and therefore she seeks revenge on June. But I just thought, like, I almost didn't want, a lot of the time you don't get to come face to face with the people that taunt you online. So I don't know if it would have been more poetic, or I don't know, that she didn't come face to face with the hurt aggressor, because a lot of the time we don't get to know who's doing that, who's trolling us.
Yeah, you're right. And also it just felt a bit too neat and tied up, and suddenly it was the end of the book and she'd been found out.
And it frustrated me that it was like she had the idea to like tell her story, and then this whole thing with Athena's ghost came back again. But it's just like, you could have just, she had so many different opportunities, she was given so many opportunities to come clean about what she did and she didn't do it. And then I think she finally found an out and then she didn't do it. And then she has this whole thing on the stairs of a cathedral, which was really annoying. And then she goes and writes the same book that she was planning to write out of her own narrative anyway. And so, well, I don't know why we had this whole bit with the cathedral and this and Candace.
Yeah,
it was really silly.
And also I think it was like described a little bit like a horror, like, oh, she's got a ghost. Or I thought it was actually going to have a bit of a like fantasy element to it, and it didn't. I was a bit disappointed because I wanted it to be a bit like, and ghost was actually like kind of haunting her, but yeah, she wasn't really. It was just an Instagram account. I was like,
that would have been really interesting if the ghost, because she did, you know, she saw her friend die, and I don't think we talk about that enough. That's gonna have like some sort of like, that's gonna follow you.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. There are many things that I wish the book had done that it didn't do. And also, like, it did make me think a lot about who owns stories and what. Like, because, for example, Athena, June says that Athena, like, stole people's stories. She, like, mined people for stories, which I think is really, like, an interesting thing to say, because don't, like, what? Okay, so I was thinking about this. I need to get my thoughts. But it's the question of who owns creative ideas, and is anything an original idea? Because you'll get inspired by stuff, and like, what, where is the line of like, I'm going to tell your story and not really tell you that it's your story that I'm telling, I'm going to steal your story. Or like the inspiration, like she's had an interview with someone and it inspired her to tell a story. And I remember seeing this article, like, me and Ellie both work in advertising, and there was this article about an ad that was, that an agency said was stolen, like their idea was stolen, and then like the editor of the press, like trade press, wrote an article being like, what is an original idea and what can be like, she's basically like just debating, like, was the idea stolen or were they inspired by an idea that they'd heard? And like, where's the line in creativity of like inspiration and stealing something? Yeah. And I don't know the answer to that, but I just, it just made me think of that, like, in terms of like, what, and I think that's June's argument, isn't it? She's like, well, Athena stole stories, I've only done the same thing as her, which, no, she hasn't.
Because, no, she hasn't, like, very different.
Yeah. But that whole, like, moral debate of like, where's the line in your creative ideas is really interesting, I think.
Yeah. It's like, sorry to you, June, for, you know, the way in which something very, which was very personal, happened to you, made it out into the world. Like, yeah, that was not cool at all. But yeah, what you did wasn't the same. It wasn't really the same thing.
No.
So it's apples.
But yeah, I just find it really interesting. But I think, I also think that could have been played on a bit more.
Yeah, I just, there was so much from, I, like I said, I feel like she was sitting on her hands a bit, because there's only so, you can only go so far with it within the industry that you're working in.
But do you
in.
Think that's because it was published and there were editors and publishing houses involved? Yeah, and they probably. Were like, wait, hold on a sec, we can only critique ourselves so far. Like,
if she just done, if this was her final soul, like, final book, I'm never writing anything again, and she just wants it, because she could probably put it out on her own anyway without a publishing house, right? She's got big enough status. Might be, she could probably just left it all out there and then dropped the mic and walked away. But she doesn't. And so, yeah, I think for me, I think I gave it a 4 because she's a good writer. So I don't want to take away from the fact that, take away from that fact. But then I was talking to 2 friends about it, Carly and another one. I did it for a book club at work. And I think after speaking to them, I think maybe I'm a 3. I've just felt very like flat by the ending was very flat. And I'm just a bit disappointed by that.
Yeah, I think the ending made me downgrade as well. I think in my Goodreads, I said, I think I gave it 3.75 and I said, there could have been more subtlety to some of the explorations of the themes. And I found the pacing a bit off.
Yeah,
but that I enjoyed it and I want to talk about it, and like, I feel like we've talked about it for almost an hour, but I could talk about it for another hour. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's so many things that we haven't discussed in it.
I don't really think we talked about race that much, but
which is like the main thing, isn't it? Which is the main thing. She's like pretending to be racially ambiguous so that she can steal a story that and then she's like, oh, I'm white, that's why I haven't got anywhere, which is like, oh, bore off. Do you know what I mean? And, like, it's just,
and then even race within the publishing industry anyway, because actually there's a really good point that I did fold about, you know, how they could just sometimes they just pick one person, they're just gonna like show pony,
which is what June says about Athena, isn't it? Oh no, Athena says about herself, she feels like she is that person, and she has to, and that's like, that's depressing as hell.
It's a really hard thing to be as well. I think if you are the one person that has to represent a whole group, there's so much. Maybe there's a part two to this. Maybe we do a part two. Maybe we haven't quite finished everything that we need to say, but
yeah, maybe we get, like, I'd love to know everybody else's thoughts on it, because it's such a bestseller, and like, bestseller, it's not chosen. But like, I am interested to know, because like, I think the general consensus is it is a good book, but like, but then, okay, it's the same thing, isn't it? Like, in order to write a book that has mass appeal, she couldn't go on and on and on and on and on and on and on about different themes, because people wouldn't enjoy it.
No.
Like, if she made the book another 200 pages, which is what I think she would need to do in order to explore more themes, would people read it? Okay, so many questions and not many answers.
So many questions, not many. Yeah. Yeah. It had so much going for it.
But it's generally good, I think, and also I think it's important for the publishing industry to have this book out that so many people have read. So people, because people don't necessarily know much about the publishing industry, and like, I think, you know, okay, I'm not sure how much of it is factually correct or how much of it is like played down as well, but it's a good like conversation starter amongst people who read that might not know that much about the book publishing industry.
And hopefully it goes away to changing things. I mean, exactly. Nothing's going to change overnight, but the discourse,
but we are
there.
Seeing like some changes, like hopefully,
but it shouldn't take, what I think they talk about imprints and stuff as well, right? There's so much, guys. Tell us what you think. I think there might be a part two. It might be like a little bonus 15 minutes where we answer your questions around this book. I don't know,
maybe we should talk to someone. If someone works in publishing, let us know and we'll talk to you about it, because I would like to know how some people that know what publishing is like and how they feel about the book and what it says, and does it go far enough.
Wow. What are you reading currently?
I am currently reading His Only Wife.
I do like that book.
I can't remember the author's name.
Can I have it next to me?
But Ellie read it ages and ages and ages ago, and I've had it on my bookshelf for ages. And I wrote a list, guys, of all the books on my bookshelf that I was meant to read this year, and I have not made a dent. So that's why I'm going to read that.
Peace.
And also, sorry.
Peace. Her name just came up. Peace Adozu Mehdi.
There you go.
It's the author of it. I do like that book.
I'm enjoying it. And I'm also listening to the audiobook of Friendaholic by Elizabeth Day.
Okay, I'll add that to my list. Brandaholic. Yeah. Oh, I've got
audio,
some listening to it.
Audio.
Okay, I've got four credits, so I need to really get rid of Audible.
Because it's read by her, and she does podcasts and stuff, so it's like quite like
easy to listen to.
Yeah.
I am reading The Book of Fire by Christy Lefteri, which
very good.
Kath has already read.
We kindly gifted it, which was so cool, and we were like, oh my god, yes please.
Hashtag yes please. So yeah, and it's actually I'm very much enjoying it, so they're probably going to be your next book, spoiler alert. And I'm not listening to anything. I'm still like trying to make my way through Pamela Anderson's memoir. If I'm enjoying a book that I'm reading, then I'm more likely to read that than listen to anything.
Yeah, but I listen to audiobooks and I'll go for a walk and listen to an audiobook.
Yeah. I used to do it like, oh, I'm going to Westfields this weekend, so I'm going to stick an audiobook on, because it's an hour's journey on the bus in the middle of the day when I'd need to go. So there and back, it's like 2 hours worth of listening. But then I'm really getting into but I've just been listening to more music recently.
Yeah, to be fair, like, I have to be in the right... Also, an audiobook has to be good.
Podcast.
Because I always listen to memoirs on Audible, and I started two, and I just didn't even finish them. But anyway,
yeah, also,
I digress. That's probably in a chat for another episode. But let us know your thoughts on Yellowface. Let us know if you want to chat to us about it. Send us your voice notes.
Send us your voice notes. Someone did send us a voice note, I think by accident, but we really appreciated hearing the inside of your pocket trouser.
Whoever but you hey, are. If we get enough like opinions, we'll do an episode and like talk about it. So maybe just like DM us on Instagram and that kind of thing. And
it'd be like a quick 15-minute, 20-minute episode going into bits that we've missed.
Yeah, because I'm sure we have missed a lot.
We've missed loads. This took some planning, actually, because we wanted to make sure that whatever we said it, you know, with sensitivity.
Okay. Well, have
a nice day. Yes. Have a nice one.
Love you, bye.
Love you, bye. And that's the app. If you like the episode, please leave us a lovely review, subscribe and share with your friends. And we'll love you forever. Follow us on socials at We Are Bookish Pod. Thanks for listening.